Thanks very much. Lower the mic chair a little bit. I'm Lexi Nolan. I'm with the Center to Eliminate Health Disparities at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. We're going to talk a little bit about a health impact assessment that we recently conducted, and actually I should say are still in the process of completing in Galveston, Texas. Our center, in collaboration with the Georgia Health Policy Center in Atlanta, this project was funded by Health Impact Project, which is, as John mentioned, a collaboration of Robert Wood Johnson, Pew, and Kresge. Can I take a quick poll? How many of you are familiar with health impact assessments? Does anybody feel like they're not familiar with health impact assessments? I'm asking because that will give me a sense of the pace at which we can go on some of these earlier slides. Okay, thanks very much. Great. So John gave you a little bit of background on some of the methodologies that he's developing with cumulative risk, which I think are really interesting. As he mentioned, that methodological part has been more developed with our work in Port Arthur, less so with our health impact assessment in Galveston, but we really wanted to try to bring out the Galveston experience and the use of health impact assessment in particular because it spoke to a very interesting coalition building process that we've had in the city. About 5 years ago, our city was struck by Hurricane Ike, which damaged or destroyed about 70% of the buildings and residences on the island. And so we've had a pretty extensive rebuilding process, and part of that effort led to our center trying to develop a Galveston Health and All Policies program, where we were trying to think about rebuilding and recovering the city in healthier ways. We have been able to focus on the sediment that washed over the island and what kind of an environmental threat that posed for residents. We were able to focus on highlighting the food deserts that existed before but worsened after the storm. And this effort was really focused on recovery of public housing, but there's a story to it that we'll talk about in a minute. So in terms of health impact assessments and why they're useful for advancing health, we know we're not getting very good bang for the buck in the United States on our investments in the healthcare system and what we get as a return. And part of the problem, part of what's driving that, of course, obviously, we all know at APHA, right, is this issue of social determinants of health and externalities of business, and how does that feed into a cycle of ill health or good health within a community, and where are we putting our investments? So health impact assessments have become a really effective tool for trying to say, let's take a look at what the health impact of these policies are when they're not related to the healthcare system in particular, whether they're education policies or housing policies or transportation policies or any other kind of policy, right? So HIA is a systematic process to determine the potential effects of a policy, program, plan, or project on the health of a population. It looks at the distribution within the population and provides recommendations on monitoring and managing those effects. Now, the recommendations can span from this is not a good idea at all to here are ways to mitigate or try to lessen the poor health impact of different aspects of the program. The assessment is done using an evidence-based approach, but it also is intended to be a community-engaged process, both for reasons of strengthening the quality of the work, but also in terms of the effect that engaging a community can have. So we have a couple of pictures here to illustrate. We've got, you know, a huge highway with 8 lanes of traffic, or 7 lanes, I guess. And the little yellow circle is identifying someone who's crossing the street, and this is in a context where, you know, we talk about safety and we talk about exercising, but sometimes it's difficult to find ways to do that. The bottom picture is actually a picture of the port in Baytown, Texas, and how looking at how close it is right on top of that residential community. This is not a low-income community. This is a middle-income community. And that's just to illustrate that impacts on the population can span a range of different kinds of groups. It's important to look at equity issues. It's also important to remember that we're all at risk from our environment if we're not diligent about looking at what those health impacts are. So some key values of a health impact assessment, which I think are relevant to talking about coalition building, include democracy, equity, sustainable development, ethical use of evidence, and a holistic approach to health. Now, some of these values are intrinsic to the nature of conducting a health impact assessment. Some of them are values that are intended to be imposed on health impact assessments. Obviously, it's possible to unethically use evidence. We hope that people are taking this into account. And this is one of the ways that having a deeply engaged coalition building strategy or community engaged strategy can really be helpful, because a lot of times researchers aren't, even though we're trained in ethics, we don't always cue in immediately to what all of the ethical issues are from a community perspective. So in terms of the stages of an HIA, there are generally five stages, kind of determining whether you should do an HIA, then determining what you should be looking at and how to do it, actually looking at the evidence and doing the appraisal, communicating the results to stakeholders, and monitoring the effects. And I'm putting this up here because I think that it's really important to recognize that every single one of these stages has tremendous potential for involving the community. And not just for involving the community in a passive way or an advisory capacity, but involving the community in a way that's going to lead to a much bigger impact at the end of the work in terms of having a groundswell of support for results, in terms of being able to enhance communication within the community and developing a communication strategy, and leading to longer-term changes, not only in terms of trying to carry on the work, but in terms of the way people think normally about decision-making processes. So, as I said, the Galveston Health Impact Assessment was conceived as part of the Galveston Health and All Policies Initiative, which was a response to Hurricane Ike. It focused on the housing sector and specifically the health impact of rebuilding public housing. So immediately after the storm, we had 569 units of public housing that were torn down, and a plan was developed to rebuild them. But it encountered enormous political resistance at the local level. And what originally had been supported by the city council and the local housing authority to rebuild the public housing and to develop this study to support how to rebuild it in the healthiest way was actually overturned about 4 months after we got the grant. The original key question for the project was which locations in the city of Galveston would present the best options for supporting health for public housing residents. At the time, the plan was to build project-based voucher sites. Eventually, it was transitioned to scattered site housing, scattered sites where housing units are distributed across the island, which was a key departure from the way that public housing had been structured in the city previously, which had been block style. It had been footprint sites. And this was a big psychological change for the city, I think, that was part of what, shall we say, engaged everyone so much on the issue. So just in terms of connecting cumulative risk and housing, HIAs, we think, are a natural vehicle for cumulative risk approaches because they give such latitude on the kind of evidence that you can include. At the same time, they don't give you the answers for the methodology of how to assess cumulative risk, and that's part of the work that Dr. Prohaska has been doing. So that Galveston HIA focused on the built environments, specifically, I want to say it was the built environments effect on physical, mental, and social health, because the plan that we were looking at was about where to put the housing. And so if we look at this kind of pathway diagram, we see a number of different kinds of ways that housing affects health, and through each of these pathways we might find a variety of indicators that taken together present a model of cumulative risk. So, as I said, the City Council and the Housing Authority Board were expected to, and in fact did turn over a few months after our grant was awarded, and the effect of this was that we needed to find new local champions. We no longer had the kind of political support and the technical agency support that we had thought we were going to have going into the project. And so what we wanted to do was to really deepen the community engagement strategy and look at this as a longer-term project with an extended timeline. So we convened a community advisory committee. And I'm putting the names of the different groups that were represented up there for you because I want you to understand that this was a really diverse group of political folks. There were people on this advisory committee who did not really feel like public housing recovery was in the interests of the city. There were folks on here who were very strong advocates for public housing. And it was a little bit of a risk, but we felt like it was really important to try to keep the participation broad for a couple of different reasons. One was that the public rhetoric was getting particularly strong, and we wanted to demonstrate that you can solve problems in groups when you have a specific goal in mind and you're interested in solving a problem and you're willing to be a little bit disciplined and a little bit respectful about how you have conversations with folks. And there were people who had been outspoken who were on this board on opposite sides, and we were very happy that all of them agreed to participate and that they came to the meetings and that they were very respectful to each other and that we were able to produce a document that all of them support, which I think is a huge accomplishment given the local challenges that we had. So in terms of the process of working with the Community Steering Committee, I mean, keep in mind, this is a group of people with really diverse interests and no particular focus on health in their work or in their personal lives. We brought them together because they were community leaders. So we provided some training and health impact assessment, and we had meetings every couple months to discuss the research project and options, including the methods, including the indicators, including the findings, including how to frame and present the information, including draft documents and including the dissemination strategy. Now, of course, all of this time I'm getting very nervous because I'm monopolizing a lot of time of this poor group of people that have volunteered out of the kindness of their hearts or whatever other motivation they had to come and be part of this. And I was amazed that we continued to have such strong participation by them over the let me put this into a temporal context, over the year and a half that we've been doing this work. So here are some examples of the impact of the deeper engagement strategy on the research. So how is it that having this robust community steering committee actually affected the research? Well, one, they told us, this was a very frank group, they told us public housing is too political. Yeah, we're sitting here in this room with you talking about this stuff, but this is too political. You're gonna get burned, it's gonna create problems, it's not gonna be good. And so one of the things that we did to try to respond to that was we looked at reframing the research question a little bit. Remember that the primary research the key research question was which locations in the city of Galveston present the best options for supporting health of public housing residents. But we added a secondary research question, which was which interventions related to the neighborhood level environment could most improve the health of the city of Galveston residents. So it's a little bit of a shift. And part of the reason we wanted to do that was because the whole island was still recovering from this hurricane, it was completely legitimate to enfold this study within kind of a broader look at what's happening on our island in terms of the neighborhoods and the recovery of the neighborhoods. The second thing that we did was that we were really careful to have an explicit focus on health impacts. I mean, even though this is a health impact assessment, sometimes that it can get broadened or the way that you use language can take people in different thought directions. But we really wanted to be clear that we were not doing a fair housing study, that this was not about making a judgment about affirmatively furthering fair housing. We felt like that decision, that political decision about whether or not to build the scattered sites, was going to be decided in a different venue than what we had any influence over. And so we wanted to let that piece, that highly politicized piece of it, go and really just start with the assumption, okay, we're going to assume that you're building it, and if you do, we'd love to give you some guidance about the health effects specifically, also recognizing that there are lots of other decisions that happen in the decision-making context. The other thing that we did was we were very clear about using a methodology that used relative comparisons of locations within the city. As Dr. Prochazka mentioned, what we were trying to do was talk about Galveston specifically. We weren't trying to use national standards. We weren't trying to use HUD standards. We were trying to look at, okay, if you're building in this city, we're giving you some responses for this city. And that actually put the Community Steering Committee much at ease. The second thing they said was don't put any maps in. The real estate agents are going to come after us, and we're just going to get skewered on this. Don't put maps in that show what neighborhood is the best neighborhood because you've developed this cumulative score. And that was great because it was at the same time we knew enough to know that they knew what they were talking about. And also it presented us with a huge challenge of how do we relate this information that's all based on geographic information system mapping without using a map to show where to build, right? And we went around and around on this for a long time, and we finally decided that what we thought would be the most useful thing to do was to include the individual maps of the indicators, but not include the kind of holistic cumulative risk map of the city that showed this is the neighborhood you should be valuing the most and this is the one that needs the most work. That was the trigger for the politicization. And what we found was when we disaggregated all of the indicators and maps that it went back to that broader thought of putting the focus on the change, putting the focus on the community, the neighborhood development improvements, and what we needed to be doing in particular neighborhoods to generally improve the neighborhood, and not so much on this issue of the scattered sites. And so the other thing that we did was we really oriented the recommendations around a process for how to use the data and to use the methodology to come to decisions about where to place scattered sites. There were good reasons not to include the map that were other than the political problem, one of which was we included very specific mitigation recommendations for each of the indicators that some of which were aimed at the developer of the scattered sites, some of which were aimed at the city in terms of infrastructure support, and some of which were aimed at community organizations. And that by doing that, we were really able to speak to a larger group of people. The other thing that happened was kind of interesting. We had a memorandum of understanding that nobody would share information and share documents, but hey, it's a small town, right? And so there would be these kind of little trickle outs of information. And we think that in combination with some good advice from the Community Steering Committee about what we needed to be careful about, along with also kind of really trying to get our timing right in terms of what kinds of conversations were happening in the community, really led to a lot less reactionism to the work than what we were expecting. So that was a really valuable contribution that the Community Steering Committee provided. Now, this is a list of the various indicators that we used, and I just wanted to give you an example of some of the ways that we weighted them. You can see there was the strength of evidence, the strength of indicator or data source, and the impact on health. And there's a variety of indicators that cut across environmental health, safety, nutrition, access to healthy food, early child development, healthcare services, transportation, flooding, etc. This is the process map that we recommended to the scattered site developer for how to go about incorporating this kind of an assessment into their selection process. And we wanted to present this because we also wanted to be explicit that this was kind of one piece of the puzzle and that it fits into a larger context of what's going on with scattered site development. And it would also allow us, if they adopted this process, it would allow us to engage with them in an ongoing way about the data, about the cumulative scores that didn't necessarily have to be provided in the report. And just to give you a little more context on this, eventually it was decided that the local housing authority should not have control over the development of the scattered sites, since they had decided that they weren't interested in building more public housing. And so the task was taken over by the state's general land office. And so shortly after that transition of authority happened, we were in touch with the land office and we asked them, look, are you interested in this study? Because if you're not, we probably shouldn't go ahead and do it. And they said, no, we're very interested. Do the study. We'll write a letter of support. And they copied it to the housing authority and said, yes, we want to know what this is. And so the plan is that even after the report is issued, and of course their timeline has gotten immensely stretched out too, that we will be able to work with them on an ongoing basis to provide information about the decision making. Now the recommendations for mitigations, as I said, they were targeted to various different groups because we wanted to have a kind of multidimensional approach that was very involving of the community and that wasn't taken as, number one, so that it wasn't taken as just recommendations for scattered sites, but number two, because there is room for everybody to play at this game of community development. And to have that lost in, you know, some of the political battles that were going on would have been a shame. So we think that this is actually quite useful because it also allows us to develop a communication strategy with the community that we can use to gradually build the conversation. Now, I'm almost at the end of my presentation. The effect on coalition building. We were really pleased that we were able to bring not only a coalition of groups with diverse political interests, but bring them together at a moment where the city was really in crisis over this issue. The public rhetoric was really vicious sometimes, and it was becoming very destructive. It was damaging our relationships with the state and with FEMA and HUD in terms of recovery processes. We were being threatened because we couldn't get our local act together. And bringing this group together and having them make this commitment, we felt was really important. These groups had little or no public health or public housing focus, but they demonstrated potential for problem solving with a lot less politicking. Number two, the deeper understanding of the HIA process, the use of an evidence-based, and the potential for guiding local decisions really allowed the Community Steering Committee to get to a place where at our last meeting, which was about developing a dissemination strategy, they took over the ownership of the dissemination strategy. They said, we want to go to our constituent groups and present this in our own context, in our own interest level. So we had the president of the Chamber of Commerce saying, I want to take this to the Chamber of Commerce, explain to them why this is important for us. You present the data, and then we're going to have a conversation about what we should be doing. That was a huge ask. And it wasn't an explicit ask, but they certainly stepped up to the plate. So they're now leading the dissemination process, and they want to work together, to continue working together after the project ends, which kind of blows my mind, because it was a big deal for us to go to them and ask them to spend this much time. It's been much longer than they committed to, and now they want to continue to do the work, and they're asking us to build in processes for sustainability of the data collection and the input into public decision-making processes. Third, we're planning now to partner with the city board and two city council members to use the tool and data to guide neighborhood planning and improvements in general, as well as with, for the original intention of working with the General Land Office to create a development plan, not only for the scattered site housing, but also for a neighborhood that was particularly impacted by Ike. It was a historically black neighborhood in a low-lying area of the city that was really devastated, and they are developing a plan for rebuilding of that neighborhood, and they'd like us to work with them on that plan also. So we were able to take this very divisive political issue and turn it into a platform for local planning and change. So if you kind of look back at those kind of different moments in the HIA development process, there are lots of opportunities to use community engagement as a coalition building tool. Thanks very much.